Hi, I'm Susie Starlight.
And I'm Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show. Strange Brew and Cream.
The mighty Cream, in fact. Not just Cream, I think.
The mighty trio, the power trio of beautifulness.
Yeah, one of the originals, actually.
Yeah. That was released in 1967, you know.
And produced by Tom Dowd.
We love Tom Dowd.
We do. And we did a show on in our producer series a few weeks back, didn't we, with respect to him.
Yeah. He was quite interesting, wasn't he? He was talking about how he started working with Clapton when he just piled a load of amps into the studio, wasn't it? It was just crazy.
Yeah, all the roadies turned up. Yeah. It was the second floor of that building in New York, which was Atlantic Records. And they turned up with all these Marshall stacks and he wondered what to do. And they had it on so loud that he was pinned against the back wall. But, you know, did a great job on that record.
Yeah, apparently they recorded a song called Lordy Mama with Ahmet at Gurn Atlantic. And then when they were working on Disraeli Gears, the producer, who's called Felix Pappalardi.
Indeed.
Yes, you know him.
Of course I do.
And he took the tape home and reworked it with his wife, and that came out as Strange Brew.
Right, well, there you go.
Yeah, bit of fact, a little bit of trivia. As it were.
Fantastic trivia, though. Fantastic.
And also featured in the film More American Graffiti.
More American Graffiti.
Yeah, because I used to have a T-shirt with American Graffiti on it. It was really funny. And then I realised today there was a second one. So I knew how to enunciate it. More.
A very original title.
Indeed. Well, a good start to the Supertone Show today, hey, baby?
Yeah, so there we are. What's next?
Yeah.
Reverend Al Green, mighty indeed. What a groove.
He definitely had a groove, didn't he? The old Reverend.
He certainly did.
Still has.
Well, I certainly have. I was dancing around there, giving it some serious arse wiggling then.
I know, but that was released in 1971.
Yeah.
And it's still fresh. It still feels vibrant and relevant.
It does. And that was that his first big selling album?
It was.
Sold a million copies, yeah?
Yeah, the album was called Al Green Gets Next to You. Sorry, I'm having fun with these things today. Sorry.
Yeah. There were some terrible titles. Great music.
I know, it's just a little bit like, I don't know, when I read that, I just thought, oh, here we go. Do you know he was a sixth out of 10 kids?
Blimey.
And
halfway down the line.
That man has some history. Mm. It's really interesting when I was reading about him today. And, of course, he's actually an ordained minister as well.
That's right.
Well, I didn't realise that. I just thought he was one of those slang nicknames that they would give to somebody. But, yeah, he's been a bad boy. And then he's been a good boy. It's life, I guess. It was funny. But he got kicked out of his house. And this is really weird, right? He got kicked out of his family home when he was in his teens because his father was religiously devout and he caught him listening to Jackie Wilson.
No.
And he kicked him out of the house.
Holy shit.
Now, isn't that weird?
I wonder what they thought, because my first record I bought was Atomic Rooster and The Devil's Answer. That was the first single I ever bought. Can you imagine? He'd have me out on my bloody ear for that, wouldn't he?
I know, but just the whole thought that, you know, in those days, that people took music so seriously that they, if you were listening to the devil's music, and the secular music, they'd kick you out of home.
Well, after, of course, you know, it caused a tremendous hoo-ha at the end of the 50s, didn't it?
Yeah.
You know, when all that happened. And, you know, I think Atlantic, they were again at the heart of all this trouble, weren't they, with Tom Dowd?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy. And that song has been covered by loads of people, like Texas, the Scottish band, they covered it. Michael Bolton, covered
God.
It. And Tom Jones.
Oh.
It's fun.
Well, Al Green, every time that comes on, you know, and often I'll play it before a gig.
Yeah.
You know, you've heard us play, we'll put it on the dressing room and stuff, you know, the Starlight Campbell Band were there, and we'll chill out to a bit of Al before we go on, you know, and jam along to it and sing, you know. Of course, he's got a ridiculously high voice, so...
makes you feel good, doesn't it? It gets you in that right space for gigging. Yeah,
absolutely. As does this.
Pick up a gun.
Manassas, Song of Love. So I've got it on me today, sorry.
Yeah. Stephen Stills, of course.
Yeah, of course. Whose middle name is Arthur.
No, I didn't know that. Well,
Arthur?
But it was a bit of a super group, wasn't it,
yeah.
Manassas? Because it had Chris Hillman in. And Chris Hillman, of course, was in the Byrds originally, you know, doing all those fantastic songs with Roger McGuinn and Gram Parsons. And then they went on to form the Flying Burrito Brothers, which always makes me laugh.
It's a funny old name, that, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's comedic.
And Chris Hillman fired Gram Parsons out the band.
No
because,
way.
Yeah, because he was hanging around a lot with the Stones, was Gram Parsons. And he tried to copy their lifestyle, and he'd be turning up in limousines outside gigs that they were only getting paid $200 for, and the limousine had cost more than they were getting for the gig.
No way.
So, yeah, and he was always that completely pissed up and out of it on all sorts of substances, you know. So Chris Owen fired him.
Oh, right.
And the Burrito Brothers carried on. Of course, you know, very famous. Then Gram Parsons went to do his country thing, which, you know, we've listened to that album, that first album. Everybody goes mad about it. Say, oh, it's fantastic and stuff. But it just sounds like country music to me. And I'm very sorry.
You didn't get me either.
No,
we've tried a few times, and we will continue to do so, I think.
We will, yeah, because we like listening back. We got it on vinyl. It's a really great copy as well. It's
yeah.
a beautiful original copy of that album. Anyway, but back to Manassas with Stephen Stills, of course, famous for Crosby, Stills, Nash, and occasionally the very troublesome
occasionally
Young.
But
a great guitar player, great singer,
yeah.
and this was another one of those bands that did everything at the same time. You can hear it, you know, everybody's recording at the same time. And I just love the energy of this album. It's a double album. We've got it, and we play it an awful lot, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I love it. And also, I think Bill Wyman played some additional bass on
Wymo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there was some sort of folklore or something saying he would have actually joined that band, because I think he really loved playing with them.
Yeah.
So that was quite interesting. And when you read how, like, Stephen Stills is a multi-instrumentalist, he plays every bloody thing.
Does he?
Incredible.
Yeah.
And Neil Young called him a genius. And he used to experiment with stuff. And I read something about that he actually was experimenting with a guitar, and he was soaking his guitar strings in barbecue sauce.
No.
To try and experiment with different sounds, yeah.
I'm laughing now because the Rolling Stones probably, that's where they got the name Sticky Fingers for the album from. Ba-boom!
Ah!
I'm here all week, folks.
You are indeed, especially today.
Unbelievable. Yeah, but I mean, it's such tremendous instrument, and I say I think he's quite underrated as a guitar player, you know.
Yeah.
And we were introduced, you know, some time ago to Manassas by some friends of ours who were in the studio, and you know, as I say, we play that album an awful lot. It's great.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, so check it out. Check the whole album. It's really good. And of course, as is this, which is one of my favourite tracks of all time.
But I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. But I'm so tired of crying. But I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. I ain't got no woman just to call my special friend. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow. In the rain and snow. You know the first time I traveled out in the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son. Don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Take a hint from your mama, please. Don't you cry no more, don't you cry no more. Cause it's soon one morning, down the road I'm gone. But I ain't going down that long old lonesome road all by myself. But I ain't going down that long old lonesome road all by myself. I can't carry you, baby, gonna carry somebody else.
Canned Heat, On the Road Again. Again, fantastic song. And that in fact, you can just hear it in the background. That is a tambora, I believe. An Eastern instrument.
It sounds it.
Yeah. Oh,
it sounds psychedelic.
And some harmonics there as well, just to finish it off. Yeah, but lovely, you know. And what I love about that is the simplicity of the song. It's vocal. It's that slightly, you know, very, very high falsetto thing going. But that bass, just that open, do-do-do-do. It's super groovy.
Yeah.
And that vamping harp all the way through it. Very, very simple song, but it really, really works. It's like got that hypnotism, hasn't it? It's a hypnotic feel about the whole thing. And psychedelic. Mm. And that was something that I liked about, you know, this track. It really added that psychedelic element to the whole thing. You know, of course, they're there at Woodstock, and
that's how I first got to find out about them, actually. And they're quite noticeable because of that falsetto that he's singing
very
as well.
Very hairy as well. They're all very hairy, Canned Heat.
So that Alan Wilson guy was the guy singing.
He not Jockey Wilson. The Alan Wilson. All right,
no.
Alan Wilson. No, excellent. Good.
What are you on about?
Well, we looked a bit like him, I suppose. Anyway, Jockey Wilson.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
So he was like apparently trying to impersonate some guy, but that song is kind of there's a bit of a history with it, because there was this Tommy Johnson had a song He was a Delta bluesman. In 1928, had a song called Big Road Blues. And that's where the band got the name from, because he had another song called Canned Heat Blues.
Blimey.
So anyway, there was this... So this Tommy Johnson chap, there were two other songs that a Chicago guy called Floyd Jones kind of plagiarized, you know, taken as inspiration and manipulated a bit. So there were... And these were the On the Road Again and Dark Road. So Alan sort of took bits of his songs, wrote some verses, and it's like, and he has credited them actually with being the authors, the writers Blimey. Of the song. So yeah, it's come from like a real sort of history of Chicago and old blues men, that song as well. And you can kind of...
But what I like about it, I like, as I say, it's a simplicity, but you know, that harp all the way through, it's just a great, groovy song, and a real song of its era. It's sort of, you know, you can imagine what was happening at that time. Every time you put it on,
yeah,
you know, you got that feel of what was going on in America at that time.
It was odd, isn't it? I didn't realise that Alan Wilson died at such a young age. 2 weeks before Jimi Hendrix died at age 27, and 4 weeks before Janis Joplin died.
Is that right?
Yeah, so on the Manassas album, from the song that we just played as well, there's a song dedicated to Alan Wilson. And it's called Blues Man.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it's dedicated to him and also Jimi Hendrix and Duane Allman.
A bit of rock and roll trivia for you. Fantastic. Mm. From the mouth of Susie Starlight, my wife.
See. If the Creek Don't Rise by Dylan LeBlanc.
Mmm. A bit of a pal of ours, really. Because we know Monty Hitchcock is ex-manager.
Yeah.
And Monty is he's a great guy. And that's his real name. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He lives in Nashville.
Nashville,
Tennessee.
Baby.
Yeah. And we met up with him when we were over there and got horrendously drunk at a Mexican restaurant. And when I mean horrendously drunk,
day.
I mean we got absolutely horrendously drunk. And it was amazing.
We had such good chats, though.
Oh, yeah. He's a cool guy, Monty, you know. And
really,
he introduced
really
us to the very famous fashion designer, Manuel, who designed a lot of clothes for everybody, Elvis and all that. So we met Manuel before he retired. And his office was above Manuel's shop, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we met him. But I met Dylan in the 100 Club in London. I went to see him some years ago. In fact, when it was the same time I was mastering 36, my first solo album
okay.
at Metropolis with John Davis.
Yeah.
And we were down there and I went down to see Dylan and Monty and it was fantastic. And we got horrendously drunk again at that night. And at that time as well, I met Daniel Stoddard, who was playing pedal steel for us. Yeah, so that's how I met Dan.
Daniel Stoddard rocks.
Yeah, oh, he's a cool guy. He's on all over our Facebook. He's
mega
cool.
Love him.
Yeah, and he's all down that Muscle Shoals area, and Dylan was very into that Muscle Shoals thing, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, his dad was a songwriter, and he worked in Muscle Shoals. So when he was like 10 to 14, he went to live with his dad, and he got to sit in a load of sessions at Fame Studios. So he had a really good few years where he was just soaked and surrounded by music and musicians.
Well, I mean, not barbecue sauce like
no,
Steven
no,
strings.
No, nothing to do with that.
Excellent.
No, so and also Emmy Lou Harris is doing backing vocals on that,
yeah,
that
well,
track
to get
as well.
Emmy Lou, yeah, because of you know, Monty used to manage Emmy Lou, didn't he?
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, it's all that thing and. You know, we're very, very lucky to meet these people. We're so cool and so nice, you know.
We were. So remember when we were in Nashville, we drove down and met up with Dylan in one of the. It was one of the few bars you could still smoke. Remember, you could hardly see.
Yeah.
It was just like, and he was so lovely.
And you
so
were still
lovely.
Smoking at the
I
time,
was.
And I was gassed. And of course, I've never smoked cigarettes. And it
no,
was like terrible.
Didn't like it, did
and it was awful. But we saw this guitar player. It was pretty good guitar player.
I remember.
I can't remember his name now. Oh, I know you had very pointed shoes.
Yeah.
A nice guitar player. And Monty recommended we go down there and see him. And Dylan walked in and we had a chat with him.
So check his album out. That was from his first album. It's called Pauper's Field. And it was released in 2010. And he was signed to Rough Trade as well.
Yeah. Great artist. But very, very good. If you're into Gram Parsons and all that country thing and a bit of Neil Young, he's got a lovely voice, lovely touch,
yeah.
and lovely lyricist as well. You
absolutely,
know.
Yeah. And coming up next, this lady, she kicks ass.
Does she?
Yep.
Wants to see me.
Me and My Chauffeur by Memphis Minnie.
Now, with a name like that, you've got to be good, haven't you?
She was born in 1897, so we're talking really early.
Where was she from?
She was from Memphis.
Sorry.
You got me then. I was just checking my notes. Bugger off.
Anyway, Memphis Minnie, who was surprisingly from Memphis.
Yes, duh.
Yeah, that was very good, very good. Anyway, go on.
So weird thing. So she was such. How am I even going to speak to you now? Right, she was born Lizzie Douglas, but she didn't like the name Lizzie, so they called her Kid. So she was kind of Kid Douglas for a while. But when she was age 13 in 1910, she ran away from home to live on Beale Street. And she played on street corners for most of her teenage years, occasionally returning home, went to her family's farm when she ran out of money. And then she went off and she was performing with the Ringling Brothers Circus for 4 years as well. So, you know, in those days, you could run away to the circus. So she did that. Wow. And then she went back to Beale Street, and that had a real, obviously, thriving blues scene. And she made her living playing guitar and singing. And this is quite sad, actually, because she also supplemented her income by prostitution.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, apparently at that time it was not uncommon for female performers to work as prostitutes out of a financial need, you know.
Blimey.
So it makes me feel, like, sick that you've got musicians who have to do that to survive, really. And then she got married a few times and she got discovered singing for dimes outside of a barber shop. So she went by a talent scout for Columbia. It's weird, isn't it? So you have this really hard, tragic kind of side of life, the hardship of that. And then the next paragraph, and then she got discovered by a talent scout, you know, which is the things really, the story of what dreams are made of, isn't it? To be discovered by somebody walking past you when you're singing for dimes on the street corner.
Yeah. Of course, it must have been. I mean, at that time, I mean, she was, in 1910, she was 13. I mean, my goodness me. I mean, you know, black tough. America then.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about tough. It must have been absolute hell on earth.
Yeah.
Know?
So she's been by 1941, she started playing electric guitar. And I love the idea of Memphis Minnie. I like the sound. I like the authenticity. I can hear it in her music. And she was known as a polished professional and an independent woman who knew how to take care of herself. This is what I really loved about her as well. She presented herself to the public as being feminine and ladylike. She wore expensive dresses and jewellery, but she was aggressive when she needed to be, and she was not shy when it came to fighting. So she even chewed tobacco all the time, would you believe? And like had this little cup that you used to have on the side to spit into whenever she felt like it.
Fantastic.
And there's this great quote from a blues musician. Here's another great name, Johnny Shines.
Wow.
Right? He said, "Any men fool with her, she'd go for them right away. She didn't take no foolishness off them. Guitar, pocket knife, pistol, anything she could get a hand on, she'd use."
Lamping somebody with a guitar. Yeah. What happened to you, man? Well
Memphis Minnie got me.
Just hit me on the head with a guitar. Flipping Nora. Unbelievable.
So it's like the
whole...
But, of course,
Sister Rosetta Tharpe as well. I mean, she was round about that era. And we had her on a couple of weeks ago now. You know, and again, another great woman electric guitar player.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you don't hear a lot of this stuff, you know?
No.
Anymore. And I'm really glad we managed to dig that one out. The archives.
Yeah, me too. And it's actually makes doing the show really rewarding to discover stories about people as well as discovering their music.
Because we listen to them all the time, and because really, you know, the Supertone Show is all about what we listen to on a day to day basis at home. You know, on our vinyl collection and stuff. And it's like being in our front room. So
indeed.
And you're listening, of course, to Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell, the Starlight Campbell Band.
Small jean genius snuck off to the city, strung out on lasers and slashed back blazers, and ate all your razors while pulling the waiters, talking about Monroe and walking on Snow White. New York's a go-go and everything tastes nice. a little greenie. Ooh. Get back on it. Gene Genie lives on his back. Gene Genie loves chimney stacks. He's outrageous, he screams and he bawls. But Gene Genie, let yourself go. Smiles like a reptile. She love him, she love him, but just for a short while. She'll scratch in the sand, let go his hand. He says he's a beautician, sells you nutrition, keeps all your dead hair for making up underwear. Poor little greenie.
David Bowie, the Gene Genie.
I love the bass in that track.
Bass? Oh, yeah. We haven't mentioned it all show, so I suppose we better get some bass pouring in now. Go on.
I love playing that song. The groove is just brilliant. It just puts a big grin on your face, and it's just perfect.
Well, it's that grinding short scale sound as well, isn't it? It's a lovely thing. And that was recorded, again, like most of the early Bowie stuff round about that time with Mick Ronson, one of my big heroes
Mick,
in guitar. Yeah.
From Hull.
They recorded it two or three takes. I think that was the third take that they did of that. And with that track, when you listen to it and sort of analyse it a bit, the entry into the first chorus is a bit late. And obviously, because they were actually just doing it on the fly and it's not regular. And there are bits and pieces of errors and clinks and clanks and stuff, but it adds to that sound. But it sounds very immediate.
It's alive, isn't it? Yeah. That's the main thing. That was released in 1972, and it was the lead single for Aladdin Sane as well, which was released in 1973.
Yeah.
That's cool. Do you know where the title of that song comes from? It's a clumsy pun for a French filmmaker and poet called Jean Genet.
No.
Yeah.
Jean Genet, Genet.
Yeah, yeah. Jean Genet, G-E-N-E-T. So it's Jean Genet.
Blimey.
Le Jean Genet. Jean Genet. And this guy, actually, I had a quick look into his history. He had this, one of the promos videos for the Jean Genet had a fast edit of this movie that Jean did called Un Chant d'Amour, which is a 26-minute black and white film depicting the fantasies of a gay male prisoner and his prison warden.
No.
Yeah, so this guy, Jean Genet, actually got into a bit of trouble when he was younger, and he got sent down quite a few times. He was like stealing and fraudulent stuff, and then he nearly got sent back down again. But I think Jean-Paul Sartre and different, he just mixed with all these different people who were very, very influential at the time, and they managed to save him from going back to prison by pleading with a judge or something and sending. So this guy has he's written plays, he's written poetry, and he was a political activist as well. He was commenting on what was happening in the world. So, and of course, David Bowie was quite a deep reader, wasn't he? Mm. Very a wide reader as well. So he obviously discovered this guy.
Well, I didn't know that. That is completely different.
So Jean Genet. So next time you said, and this is the Jean Genet.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. And of course, you know, Mick Ronson, I'm just going to have a wax a little bit about Mick. And, you know, during that period, he was using a fuzz box and an amp, and his wah-wah pedal just backed off a little bit a lot of the time. You know, he had that distinct sound. But I loved the documentary that we saw pretty recently. Was it Beside Bowie? And there's a little thing about how he actually records. He said, well, he said, you get your guitar, he says, you plug it into the amp, you turn it on full, and there you go.
Yeah.
Which I think was absolutely fantastic. It's great advice for any guitar player out there.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, keep it simple and turn it up full. And that's what it's all about. So loud is good.
Larkin Poe and Don't. It's taken from their 2014 album, Kin.
Right, Larkin Poe.
Yeah.
Love those girls.
They're really cool, aren't they?
Yeah. They, you know, they do some great little videos and wicked slide player. You know, one of the new breed of proper, really good female blues artists. That's pretty rocky, you know, but it's still great, you know, real good sound.
Yeah.
They've got great voices as well, you know. I love
it. They have. They're called Larkin Poe because apparently their great, great, great grandfather was Edgar Allan Poe.
No!
See.
These are facts that you just don't get anywhere else except the Supertones show with Sue Star and Simon Campbell. You don't get them anywhere else.
Face magazine says these women are seriously badass. Don't mess with them.
Yeah. A bit like Memphis Minnie. Exactly, I bet they clock you with a guitar thing. As well.
The one thing I'd say, though, there is this kind of polishedness about them, and sometimes I feel I want to rough them up a bit, you know, because they're a little bit shiny. Yeah. They just need a little scuff shoes and just get a bit dirty, and I think it would feel a little bit more rootsy and it'll have that little... For me, anyway, that's what I want. But I'd love to see them live, but hear them live. They're playing South by Southwest this year in Bonnaroo as well.
Yeah.
So they're touring America over the next few months. I checked out their tour schedule in case they were coming to the UK.
Great. Well,
that's cool.
You talk about getting roughed up. This next artist, of course, produced by Mick Ronson and David Bowie, was all about rough. Mighty Lou Reed of Transformer fame, i.e. the album, introduced to me by a friend of mine called Howard Fisher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Hercule actually introduced me to this album. I didn't like it. I thought it stunk, of course. He was protesting its brilliance, which he was ultimately right, of course. Yeah. But, you know, allegedly produced by David Bowie, but apparently Mick Ronson did most of the work on it. He was in the studio all the time.
Ah.
He was a real great musician, Mick. He wasn't just a guitar player. He was classically trained.
Yeah, he arranged it as well, apparently.
You know, great, great
Herbie Flowers on bass.
Aye.
And apparently the idea for that song, Lou Reed was saying, came from Andy Warhol. Did you know that?
No.
Well, you know, obviously they were hanging out loads, well, weren't they? Yeah. Yeah, they were his band, basically, weren't they? And apparently Andy Warhol said...
Yeah,
exactly, said to... So Andy Warhol said to Lou Reed, why don't you write a song called Vicious? And Lou Reed said, what kind of vicious? And he goes, you know, vicious like I hit you with a flower.
And they, of course, do it every hour, you know.
Yeah, baby, so he literally took his word verbatim and wrote the song.
Well,
inspired
great.
By Warhol. So I kind of like that.
But again, it's got that energy, like it's similar to that Gene Genie thing, you know, that real punch, you know, great vocal, great lyric, you know, and we love Lou Reed.
I do. And big love to Laurie Anderson as well, you know, because I hurt for her. Because I know that they loved each other so deeply, and that I'm just happy that they had their time together.
Yeah, and they were very happy.
Yeah, in fact, we need to play some Laurie Anderson on one of the
next
shows.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Because I love that lady.
Yeah,
I think she's ace.
Fantastic artist, and of course, this final track,
1959.
No,
by American trumpeter
Miles Davis.
Indeed, Kind of Blue. A perfect example of the Dorian mode. Now, if you know anything about this, there are these different modes in music, and this is a beautiful example of the Dorian mode. And it's a methodology of a tone, of a sound, of a feel in music, and you have different names for different feels and different notes, like patterns of notes. And this one, basically, Dorian means all the white keys in the piano, from D to D.
Yeah. That's right, so you start on D, end on D, but...
Don't play
no
any
sharps.
Sharps or flats, and the sharps correcto. Or flats on piano are the black ones, so that was all the white notes, just, you know, quickly, a little bit of a...
bit of a music theory.
Yeah, we
there,
don't want to get too thick with it, because, you know, it can do your head in. The main thing is...
It's a great song, actually, because you want to sing it. Ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-ba. Anyway, really enjoyed today.
Yes, it's been fun.
It has. If you want to get a hold of us, podcast@supertonerecords.com is the email address.
Yeah, and we're on Rock Radio every Thursday at 4 o'clock. Yeah. GMT.
And you can listen again on iTunes, Spotify, Mixcloud, everywhere.
Yeah, and it's been repeated from March every Friday morning at 9 o'clock.
Excellent.
So that's cool, hey?
So we'll see you next time. We'll leave you with the lovely Miles Davis.